What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Hollywood Already Did It. After a long strike-based hiatus, after a pandemic-based hiatus, the reboot of the show, really, the sequel, requel, whatever the kids are calling it again these days. As always, I'm your host, Blake Schultz, and with me is Terrence Tatum.
Hello, everyone.
And we are getting into the first seemingly big event movie of the summer, the sequel to one of the movies that quote unquote saved cinema, a sentence that I'm tired of hearing after 3 years of it. Top Gun did it. Why do we keep chasing this ghost?
How does it keep getting saved? Yeah, like when does it keep, yeah. Who's keep letting this die?
To be fair, Terrence, you're in SAG. So
fair enough.
We stopped it for a minute to help you out, is what That's we did. Okay. My understanding is you got everything you wanted. And that there are no longer problems in this
We're
industry.
All fine.
But Dune Part 2 is out on this lovely, lovely weekend. The sequel to Dune Part 1, the adaptation of Dune, a brutal reminder that we tried this once before and it was not good at all, and we all forgot about it. Terrence, what did you think about Dune Part 2?
You didn't like the Sting version of Dune?
I don't hate it as much as other people do, but I also appreciate the insanity of what it tried to accomplish. And I fully understand that when that came out, we just weren't ready for Sting and the brilliance of...
Dune Part 2. So I've been waiting for this for a bit. That last one left me like... I want this ingested in my veins. And I'm going to be perfectly honest with you. The Dune Part 1, I loved. I would say that it had moments where, for me overall, it dragged a bit. I think because it was dealing with a lot of the political aspects of it and doing a lot of setup to build the audience, that there are moments that I was like, this just doesn't feel like it needs to be as long as it is. Dune 2 is as long, if not longer, and I don't feel the clock at all on this one. I think maybe probably that's because that world is established and we're just off to the races and then we're just going. A lot of the political pieces of this aren't there, and if they are, they're sort of put to the side and more of like, hey, let's watch Paul Atreides sort of build this from this small boy, this young boy, to this messiah. We'll use that term because that's what we eventually get to. And that's fascinating to watch, seeing him build up and seeing how people respond and react to him on different lines or sides of what they believe in. It's just fascinating film work. And it's done on this epic scale. The scale of this is just insane. And you feel all that Hans Zimmer score, all of that comes together to just make this just epic is a word that I know a lot of people like to throw around. It definitely belongs here. You feel the epicness of it. There's performances which we'll talk about just out of the blue, but like I walked out, was like that was a meal, and I loved every piece of it. And I did the thing where I watched Part 1 directly before going into 2. I woke up early and I watched Part 1, knocked that out in Part 2, and now makes me appreciate Part 1 a lot more, because together they are a lot. That is one full story that has a beginning, middle, and end, and it is an amazing. I don't think I'm going to see anything again to this scale anytime in my current, like my lifetime, at least the next decade. This is up there. It was phenomenal filmmaking.
Yeah, it's yes to everything you said. I agree. I love the first Dune. I think it's very easy to compare it to a lot of movies, and we will do that soon. Mm-hmm. But I think you're right. This is sort of one of those generational series that comes along, maybe like Lord of the Rings, Star Wars,
mm-hmm. Matrix is a piece,
yeah, Star Trek. There's every now and then something that's of this magnitude that really comes across, where you are like, it needs to be on a huge screen with mm-hmm. the sound gone all the way up and fully immersed. And I think it's interesting. The first one and then the second one. The first one is such an immersive film in just the stuff you're looking at. It almost is like being in a museum of photography and just being wowed by everything around you. And like it feels very rich and lived in. It feels like walking around an open world video game where you can tell there's stories everywhere, but nothing's really given to you yet. And then this one pulls you in with the characters and the performances. It's a very interesting dynamic of flipping it, which is great, because I saw Denis Villeneuve's quote where he was like, I just wish I could make movies without any dialogue and just have this like visual story. I was like, what an interesting way to look at both of these then, where one is way more less dialogue centric rather than the other one. And the one that's more dialogue centric does grip you in a different way. And you see bigger villains and more aggressive moments and these transformative performances and Timothée Chalamet's arc of this rejection of power and this denial of faith almost, and the fear of what he'll become when he does it. And then the realization that like, I'm going to have to do it.
I have to do this. Yeah.
It's very, I think it's a Greek thing in their old stories of like, to reject the thing that you're trying not to do, you will become it. It's very mythological. It's a God of War Ragnarok recently sort of did that, even like there's prophecies. And remember, we're doing this not because it was written down over here, but because it's the right thing to do. And as we fight this wave, we kind of inevitably come to it. Which is interesting in a lot of ways, because you can usually argue in those stories of prophecy of like, well, what is actually happening and what are we now like correlating things to? And we could have just created this if we wanted to. Like, so often you see that dichotomy of Zendaya being like, well, no, it's not that she's going through this transformative faith spiritual moment. You poisoned her. She's responding to poison.
You always have someone who is the factual person, like, I'm taking everything literal, and I don't, that's not what that is. Excuse me. But then you always have the folks who are all in say, no, this is our sign, this is our moment, this is our part. And she's like, this is BS. You just killed this man.
And it's fun watching it, because as the audience, you see what he sees and what they see, and like all of these other kind of pieces to it. So it is a little more like, oh yeah, there's clearly something going on here. And even in the rejection of it, but you know, we could write down anything and eventually be like, see, it's what we said was going to happen. Remember when we said that this was going to happen, and then they did.
I mean, it's great. It's played for laughs and it happened so great, but I was like, that is an encapsulation of what people who are, but when Javier Bardem's character, after he's like, I'm not Messiah, I'm this. And it's like, see, he's humble. That's exactly what they said. I was like, the audience laughs because it's a huge moment for laughs, but it is telling that like, that's how, when you are so engulfed in your religion, and especially, and they do a great job, but they basically do say that, hey, the folks that are of a lesser means or in a poorer situation tend to lean on faith more. When you're in that situation, when you're the Freemans, or basically that is all they kind of have left to sort of hold on to, then yeah, they're going to lean into that a little bit more, and they'll believe whatever stories have been sort of passed down to them.
Right. And you do see even with the mothers in that system of like, oh, they also are manipulating this and changing it. So even if there is some cosmic spiritual thing happening, these people are now like sending out women to get pregnant with a lot of people. So they have a lot of possible folks, and they're above it in this weird, you know, power system that we're suddenly in a story that is so much, you know, less about where the first one hit more on like nature versus man and what we're doing to the planet and what these people did to this world. And we can't come here for the power. We need to come here to learn. And now this one is like a full on, I need ascension to power, realization that you need to like get to this throne, and watching all of these other people pull these different strings, whether it's
they're puppeteering in the background. From the emperor to the Jesuits as a whole, all of them, including Paul's mother, are all doing some just manipulating beyond all means to get whatever it is that they need or feel that is their best point across. And sometimes even playing games with each other. Like, I feel a lot of what Lady Jessica does is to get back at the rest of her Jesuits for sort of like pushing her out as the outsider of the rest of the Jesuits, and calling Paul an abomination. She's doing things to just get back at them. a lot of it's kind of like, I'm going to put Paul in position, but I want to just show them that we have the right way. And in the end, they're kind of just like, what sides don't matter. What you've just done, it's just caused a mess. This is insane.
Yeah, you basically threw the board off the table and restarted.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, it's fun seeing kind of everyone's in game. And you also now are in an interesting place of like, well, I don't even really know what the end game is now. Because for so long, it was about Iraqis, this freedom and getting out from under this. And now we've sort of tossed that. But also, it seems like this is what he's like, oh, I have to do this. There's this narrow way. There's one way to get to this.
Right.
And we have to be the people that we are to do it. We can't do it through kindness. We have to get up. And some of those moments when he's just in that spotlight doing the, like, you dream about hurting people and you like him, like, he's a god. Hey, go yeah. on. Should we follow you? I know everything about you. And they're like, no,
I'm going to read everything about you from the last 20 years of your life from top to bottom. Oh crap, well, this is him, he's the one.
Yeah, let's not, you know, I don't even want to fuck with this. And then even seeing like Austin Butler's character just be this unhinged weapon. And yeah, him just transforming into you don't even know it's him for half of it. It's just fantastic.
I mean, yeah, honestly, had I not known Austin Butler was in this film prior to, it would have taken me a moment to connect that was him. Like, he is very transformative. I'm also currently watching him on Masters of the Air, which he still very much looks like and is reminiscent to his Elvis character. But this, man, this is just from the opening sequence of him, like, putting the knife on his tongue and doing all this, like, oh, this guy is nuts. And it plays out so well. So even the final battle between the two of them is just, it's perfect. It's really well done.
And Bane and Batman and, like, the silence when they're just hammering out.
And I was like, and it's such a smart thing that they're like, drop the sound. I don't want anything but the sound, but except for them hitting each other. I'm like, you son, that is brilliant. I love it.
Yeah, that was worth the whole movie. Like, just that is. One fight. Okay, well, this is worth the whole thing.
Because, and they do a smart job of, like, keeping them apart until that very sequence. And that's the first time that they see it. You can see even in the moment when Atreides, Paul, when he first goes in and to basically kill his, to kill his uncle, he's just studying him. Like, he's just looking at him. He's like, I'm not saying a word. I'm just kind of like, and some of the facial mannerisms that he's giving is like, I'm just in awe of everything. And then when we find out, he's like, cousin. He's like, oh, cool. I've killed family members before, so this will be, it will fit right in with everybody else.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He knew everything.
He plays that well. And it's, I think for me, that is what was missing, I think, in the first part, is that we didn't have that beacon of evil. Or we had his uncle, the Baron, but he was doing a lot of things politically and, like, kind of on the background, where there wasn't somebody who was like, this guy is the person that you don't want to be in the same room with. You got a little bit of that with Batista, but as we learn, he wasn't the strongest of them all.
Oh man, when he shows up to fight Josh Brolin again too, I was like, this is just such a great hit, where I was like, oh, this is awesome, this is so good. Yeah. I love it. It is interesting. I don't know the books that well because I stopped reading because I didn't want to spoil the movie. Same. We're now done through the first book.
Mm-hmm.
Or is part three of his series, like, okay, so we're in no. Dune is done, and now it's like Dune is done. Messiah.
Dune Messiah is the third, is the second book, which is what
the second book, third movie.
Which is a lot of the Holy War, which is also why you would get somebody like Florence Pugh to play the part that she's playing in this, because it's very small here, but it is massive in Messiah.
That movie is really becoming the, like, hey, we found a popular actor to get you in the theater. They're not in it. No. Like, we really Zendaya'd Christopher Walken and Florence Pugh and Anna Taylor-Joy.
This is
a great cast to have here in the last 5 minutes of the film.
Really, it's interesting because there's time jump between books too, between Doom, from whenever we get to Messiah, there's, in the book wise, there's like a 12-year jump. In theory, the sister is born and alive at that point, but even then, she wouldn't be young enough to be played by Anya Taylor-Joy. So I don't know what they're like. That's a weird casting to get her, because you're presenting her at an age where we may not see her in in Messiah, which is just sort of fascinating.
Yeah, they're starting to hit that Oppenheimer thing of just like, hey, we have cameos because people wanted to be here, and it's like,
remember them?
but
You know them?
it's kind of
Yeah,
distracting now because
like
like.
Florence. Yeah, like Florence is saying, I guess Denis kind of went to her, was like, look, I'm going to be honest with you. The part in this is super small. And I know you are the, like, you are her. And she's like, I just want to play in the sandbox, which is what's going to happen with Denis after he starts doing stuff like Blade Runner and the first Dune. Like, look, I just want to play with whatever you got going on. I want to be a part of it. He's like, cool. And she's like, he kept repeating to me during the set, like, I know this is small. I'm sorry. And she's like, shut up. I'm glad to be here.
The bill. Yeah, I think that's where it's funny when you get to conversations about the ending, because I know both this one and the first one, more so the first one, and I hate when people say non-endings because I think it's ridiculous.
Tells the
Did you
story, right?
feel this was a non-ending, or did you think you had closure? Because I know,
It's
spoiler alerts, it ends with them leaving and Zendaya going on a sandworm and heading out.
yeah, China goes and do her own thing. What's interesting, I didn't. I thought it was, I was, oh, that's the ending. That's closure for me. I get the story and the rise of Paul, which is what we're basically putting Paul back on as the leader. We got that here. I thought it was fine. However, the people next to me in the theater were like, oh, wait, what? Like, they were disappointed. And that was what kind of jogs me. I was like, wait, is that a disappointing ending? Like, did they feel that that was abrupt? I didn't get that, but I guess I could see how people might do that. I think the story that they were telling for these part one and part two has completed. It was Leo, I mean, yes, Leo, his father dying, getting killed, and then Paul basically being his exile, and then his rise back, and him taking his mantle back, and ending what is now known as his father, but ending the Baron. And so that was the story for me. Anything else that happens afterwards, figuring out what happens with him and his mother, Lady Jessica, or Chani, or anything else that happens for is a different story. Doesn't need to be a part of this. So I feel like the ending of what I got was very final and good, satisfying. Like, I didn't feel like I needed more. I am, however, excited to see what happens in Messiah, but I can separate the two of them from each other.
Yeah, and I think knowing that there is more in it, I don't mind. Because I also was like, yeah, that's a complete ending. It's almost akin to like a Lord of the Rings, where you're like, ah, this movie ended. It's like, no, the Fellowship broke up and they're all going separate. That's not an ending. But it's a weird thing, because I feel like we had it with Spider-Verse Part One, and people were like, what the hell? And I was like, well, no, guy, it says Part One in it. It's right there. It's on all the toys. I get it, but and it is that weird thing. I'm like, well, the arc that we're telling is done, and we're just sort of like showing you that the world isn't over. It's and I think a lot of things do that. Even like if you go back to Star Wars: A New Hope, like which I'm like, it ends. They blow up the Death Star, and everyone's happy. I was like, right, except Darth Vader spins off into space. That's a loose thread. You don't
It
think that.
is.
Like that's a thread. Like we had that there. Empire Strikes Back is of course a giant cliffhanger.
I think there are a lot of loose threads here, so I can't see how people are a little upset. I think with me going in, I know that there is similar to like how Star Wars does sometimes, where we're like, we're not going to explain to you what happens in that middle section. It just we're just going to pick back up. And I think me knowing that the next piece of this, there's a time jump, and Atreides is well into power, and like he's married, Aurelian, like Princess Aurelian, like all of those things sort of are known to me. So I yes, I want to see that, but I can't see if as an audience, if you don't know that, if you don't have that information, you don't know, you're like, wait, so the Jesserit Sidul's character Margo, she got pregnant with his kid. What is that going? Where does that lead to? Whereas are they getting married? Is he just never going to see Chani again? Like those threads I can see being upsetting. But I think again, the story was more about House Atreides getting put back on the map, and Paul sort of retaking his claim. That is done here. And so anything else that happens next is sort of telling a different story, and we will get that should they go along. They will.
There's also something thematically where sometimes I feel like we have loose threads that feel like they're plot threads. And really it's like, no, you're supposed to kind of analyze this. And I think the being pregnant with Austin Butler's child is one of those moments of like, this isn't, I don't necessarily expect this to
be important for this.
I think what we're supposed to take away from this is a story ultimately about power. And in the end of the day, there's a force above all of them.
These Jesuits
that are going to keep doing this.
Like these Jesuits are going to always be in something. Yeah.
Yeah. It's similar to what we see in real life a lot, where we're like, well, all of these things are happening, but like, does it really matter who you vote for? They're all in the pockets of these corporations and they're all over here. And everyone's, in the end of the day, the system is broken or it's doing what it's designed to do. And I don't think we're supposed to be like, ooh, when's that baby going to show up? We're
I think to be for like, me too.
Oh, it's not really a win. This sucks.
I think it also just creates, it deepens the world. Like the world feels more lived in if stuff is happening. Like you don't get an answer to everything that happens in your own life. So sometimes stuff happens without you knowing. And that's kind of what it creates more of a world of like you're saying, like stuff's happening that Paul's not aware of that may not have an effect on him in the future. It doesn't matter, but that's just showing that there's always something else that's still going at play in the
world. Yeah, it's a weird way to be like, what you're doing sort of matters. And at the same time, there is a futility in it when someone else is even higher up than you realize. Yeah. And they've been playing this long con. Because half of their people that they have out, we don't even know how many they have out there. And they might not even care.
Yeah.
Like, they might, like, it's one of those weird, like, they might not even give a shit how many of these people they have. It's all just there to keep kind of the wheel spinning, which is that very unfortunate piece of reality sometimes, too. Of like, yeah, you did things in your little world, but, like, over there, something's happening. So don't get too comfortable. It's always going to keep going. There's a cycle. Mm-hmm. It's very mythological. Like there's always a cycle of violence and there's always going to be a new thing. There's always going to be something else. You don't get to do it. You don't get to just go, we beat Darth Vader and it's over. Someone else will fall to the dark side and come back. Which I did. I get why some audiences are frustrated, but I think that gets into some of that like weird media literacy of like, no, you're not supposed to be, we're not going to do 40 years of this. We're not going to tie up every
end. Yeah, we're not going to get every piece of this. This world is too big for us to give you every piece of that. I do want to just talk, the one thing that, like, my favorite, Rebecca Ferguson's my favorite part of this entire movie, but my favorite sort of scene, it's a small thing, but it does play a big part into why, that what we will get with Messiah is when Paul goes to Shani right before he's about to make his final decree to the emperor. It's like, look, no matter what happens, whatever, I love you. I've always loved you. Like, that's never going to stop. And then he basically says, yeah, I'm going to take this woman's hand in there.
Wasn't played for laughs, but probably got the biggest laugh in my theater. I know a lot of people were like, the as it's written, a lot of people laughed. I was like, you know, my theater didn't laugh at that. But when he was just like, hey, babe, I love you. Blonde. Me.
but that one.
I was like, yeah, that's what my audience was like, oh, jeez.
I was like, all right, I see how that happens. But it shows that, like, hey, I do have, like, you are the person that means the most to me. But as far as power goes and what we need to do for the world, this makes the most sense. And I have to do this. We will come to learn that there's a triangle that stays with the three of them as we get into Messiah. But that was a huge piece of like, oh, that's such a good, because just the way that he looks and then the way that Florence looks at Zendaya, kind of like, oh, that's who he really loves. So I know she's always going to be around in some form or fashion, no matter what the hell happens here. So I'm going to have to handle her.
This is all going to be very, why can't these coups ever be easy? You can't just call my emperor father here to.
Yeah,
I loved that. I loved all of the stuff with his mom and just her going insane in a weird, like maybe not insane, but like off this road and it just.
very calculated,
so good.
Like extremely calculated. Because even though she likes to say that, like the rest of the judges would like ousted her, what she is doing. So he didn't ask her to do this, but he's like, I'm going to create this story and build your name up to be this bigger thing, and I'm going to start with the poor people because they got nothing else to live for. And then once I get them, they'll go off and start spreading stuff. I was like, oh, she's manipulative. And
she's playing the long game.
She did the long game, and it is wild to watch. And she is fantastic to watch. Like I can't speak highly enough about Rebecca Ferguson as a whole, as an actress, but like she plays this because she's sort of out of her element originally, but then she's still watching out for her son and saying like, watch your back and like doing things for them. And then when she goes, she's like, look, my goal from this point on is to make sure that you are the biggest, you are a rock star by the time you cross that sand. Like you are going to be a god. And she succeeds.
Yeah. It's a very different looking at kind of like some of the stuff this movie does that a lot of stories do, because there are a lot. And I think people are going to be comparing this to Star Wars, mm-hmm. Lord of the Rings, The Matrix. And I think the easiest thing to do with all three of those stories is the idea of like the prophecy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost always like a rejection and acceptance. Matrix has a very like literal death and rebirth.
Right.
Star Wars, of course, is just Star Warsing the whole time. More of a like debate of who is the one.
Mm-hmm.
And then Lord of the Rings is also just like, it's not really a prophecy. We have to like invert this a bit. I like this one because it's less about the prophecy and more of like, hey, there is an idea of the one. And instead of like finding it, I'm actually just going to push this square piece through this circular hole. And instead, we're going to build a narrative around you.
Yeah.
We're going to make you a superstar.
If that's what they believe. You fit enough of those things that I'm going to create this story for them. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm going to rig the game. I'm the ref because it doesn't really matter if you're the one. It only matters if they believe it. That's that's it. I don't give a fuck what you believe.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think that's a really cool way of taking an idea that we see all the time in movies. The idea of a messiah, a prophet, a chosen one, blah, 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 whatever it is. And just being like, nah, they are, and I don't really care. And here's the thing, it's because of this, this, and this. Go spread that so that when he gets there, they already believe it.
Right.
It's less about finding the one and more about making him the one.
Yeah.
And we're gonna air Jordan this. And
yeah.
We're gonna make
and it's this. And it's crazy because when he goes and does his speech originally, he's coming in hot, and you can see Lady Jessica's kind of like. Slow down.
Bring it back.
Bring it back. Yeah. And then once he gets into it, it's like reads that guy. She just gives the small smile, like, we got him. We got him.
Done. Josh Brolin is like, you know what? Yeah, hell yeah. I'm fucking
yeah.
Like, yeah, he's really got everyone in it. Which is fun because I think the other thing we see a lot in these stories then is like the rejection of power, the corruption of power, and then the return to like, oh, sorry, I had the black Spider-Man suit on, but I'm Peter Parker again. Yeah. My bad. And so, you know, what do you do when you get to that absolute power? And are they like, oh, yeah, I have to, like, not be a dick.
Mm-hmm.
Oops.
Yeah.
Which is something we hear all the time.
Which is a lot of what the next one sort of deals with, which is going to be fascinating to watch, which is why I'm glad they can sort of take a time. Denis planning to go do something else before he does this because there's a time jump that works. But yeah, the eventual, most of the story of Messiah is kind of like, what happens if you have all that power? Do you act the way that you used to, or are you still doing things in a very sketchy way? And that's sort of, we don't know. Which is fun, like cool, but in this story, we see him rise to power. He's done what he's supposed to do. That is what I need, and we'll sort of guess how that goes. I can tell you this for those folks: Paul is the hero now. That changes.
Yeah, which is great because normally when we do these kind of stories, it's the sacrifice at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Usually, the story with the one is like they fulfill the prophecy and they do the sacrifice, and Neo burns it all down, and everything comes back, and Luke goes away, or Anakin falls to the dark side but brings balance. And however you want to spin it, it's very rare, I guess, outside of Star Wars, if you want to say Anakin is the one, that we do a like fallen angel storyline. We don't really get to do that often. And then usually if we do that, they still die. Very, very rarely are we like, power, fall from power. Oh no, I'm not who I am anymore. And then there's always a death. It's going to be very interesting.
I'm alive through my failures and my return to like disgrace, if you will. Yeah.
Very, very rarely do we get to do a walk back, because oftentimes when we do this story, we're like, but they were like mind controlled.
Yeah.
It wasn't power.
They weren't really who they. Yeah, they weren't their true self.
He had that black Spider-Man suit on, or like, you know, Superman came back and he was mean, but it's because he wasn't Superman yet, so we can forgive him instead of like. So wild if Darth Vader survived at the end of Return of the Jedi and just rolled up on Endor and was like, sorry, everyone, for the genocide.
My bad. I know I killed
like you. The Emperor, though. That's I did it. Luke was right. There's good in me, and I would love to help now. My bad. Sorry about Alderaan. But, hear me out, though. Y'all just told me where the base was. I'm just saying.
Would have been fine.
Those kids I killed? Don't worry about it. They were dead. A lot of them. obviously, box office wise, this is the 81 million. This is the biggest opening of the year so far. It is twice what Dune 1 made, which granted, Dune 1 was still during mask time and also was on HBO Max.
Yeah.
And right behind Oppenheimer, so it's almost like bigger than our two big hits last year with Oppenheimer and Barbie.
I mean, there's something to be said that when you sort of tell the audience that an IMAX spectacle is occurring, they're kind of like, well, then I need to see this in IMAX and Dolby. And that's sort of what happens with this film. Granted, people want to see it anyway, but like most of these tickets are not their traditional ticket sale. There's IMAX, and that's why that box office is, because it's running time is insane. So it's not like they're getting a lot of time per day, but because the box, they're doing the premium ticketing. Yeah, and it's got legs because both critics and fans are like, yes, please.
Yeah, and it's also interesting because, you know, once we get to the summer, every movie is an event that you need to see in IMAX. Mm-hmm. It really kind of goes to show you what happens when we just, you know, nobody was going to go see Mean Girls or...
And Mean Girls did okay, but I like... Like you're, I'm not going out of my way to like. Yeah. I want to see the Bob Marley movie. I'm not going. I got too many things in my life that I need to go stop what I'm doing to go watch that film.
Yeah,
it's going to be on whatever streaming device in like 45 days.
And it's funny because we talk about superhero fatigue a lot, and I'm curious how much of it is indicative of more like action adventures, CGI, bombastic, everything's an event, but none of the stakes matter. Right. Fatigue, and if now that we've kind of starved people of it for even a short time, if what it's we're going to see is like, it's not really that it was superhero fatigue, it's that it kind of was everything fatigue. You can't treat every movie like it's the biggest
thing ever,
movie ever, because then nothing's the biggest thing ever.
I mean, we've talked about this before, is that like when we were of it, we were younger, the summer blockbusters used to have like four in the entire summer, and now there's like one every week. And at some point in time, the audience is going to be like, I can't go to all of these. I'm not. Sorry.
Yeah. They're not all the biggest life-changing
correct.
Thing. Yeah. They just can't be.
Yeah.
And I wonder if it's the same thing with the quote-unquote non-ending, where I think we have a lot of people in the streaming world who don't want to commit to seasons anymore because they're like, I'm going to enjoy this and you're going to pull it out from under me. So I wonder if it's less about like, these cliffhanger endings and more like, no, guys, y'all need to like make me satisfied because I don't believe you're going to do more. So no more is coming. It's a weird double-edged sword because I also have the fatigue of like, I don't need a company to get up on a stage and tell me the next decade of their films.
This
I don't
is
need
what we're doing time. For the next 25 years.
Yeah, I don't need to do that. I don't need to know what movie I'm going to see when I'm 52. Yeah. I just don't care enough. But at the same time, like with Dune 1 when it came out, and they were like, yeah, we'll see what it does. Maybe we'll do part 2. And I was like, wait, what? No. This movie ends halfway through the book. You're doing 10. Are you insane? Yeah. Like, it was such a strange...
At least this time, it seems like he's like, I got the script. Messiah's script is done. Hans Zimmer is working the scores. Like, that's done. It's just... He wants to do something else, understandably, because these movies are massive. He wants to do something else before he comes back to this. So we're getting a Messiah. It's just a matter of when that happens is what people sort of have to wait on. Well, Warner Brothers is not. Warner Brothers is like, get to it now. Warner Brothers is like, can you do that now?
I'm so tired. Everything's orange. My rods and cones are messed up, man.
I've got sand everywhere.
Where I can't see right. I'm so tired. Understand. A person with a job had to build this machine for us to use to like pay. It's so much work. You know how far away I have to get these shots? I'm so far away. But that is our show, folks. So it is good to be back on the air. Hopefully this time it sticks around. There's nothing to disrupt it at all. You can, of course, follow it on Hollywood ADI on Twitter. Hollywood already did it on TikTok and YouTube. Where Terrence also has all of our ongoing show reviews and trailer reactions and all that other good stuff. And I'm at Edward Blake, and he's at Terrence Tatum. And we will see everybody next time.